Revealing misconduct of the powerful is always dangerous. Whistleblowers therefore face a difficult choice. By challenging and exposing corruption, they perform a vital public service, yet they historically suffer for it. In Whistleblowers, Honesty in America, From Washington to Trump, author and scholar Allison Stanger frames whistleblowing as an important but unrecognized cousin of civil disobedience. She shows how its practice has held powerful elites accountable in America across the centuries. She asserts its goal to prevent the abuse of power by those who hold it is rooted in the very DNA of America dating back to the country's founding. Allison Stanger is a professor of international politics and economics at Middlebury College, New America Cybersecurity Fellow, and an external professor at the Santa Fe Institute, and it's a great pleasure to welcome her to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
It's great to be here, Joe.
Wonderful to have you on the program. Again, the name of the book, Whistleblowers, Honesty in America, From Washington to Trump. I hate to say this, and yet, you know, the book comes out the day that the impeachment inquiry is announced and as a result of whistleblowers. So good timing for you.
Yes, I'm part of the deep state conspiracy.
Right. And yet, of course, it's a tragedy for our democracy and what's happening in this country.
Absolutely.
But let's talk about what initially got you thinking about whistleblowers and wanting to tell this story.
Well, I wrote an earlier book called One Nation Under Contract, and that book was a study of the privatization of American national security. So I was very interested in how contractors were replacing government employees in all these different facets of American foreign policy. And what I came to realize is that the line between business and government, because of this contracting, was becoming increasingly blurry. We had a revolving door between government and the private sector where people kind of lost sense of what government exists for, which is to serve the people. So I realized we were trusting our elites with an awful lot to make the right decisions for us when so much was shrouded in secrecy. That made me wonder, how do we keep our elites honest in such circumstances in a privatized world? And that led me to whistleblowers as a topic 7 years ago. So I've been working on this quite some time.
You certainly have. So let us talk about where we are now, because it's such, I think, let me ask you, is what we are seeing now, given as this is playing out before our very eyes, is this a good example or a bad example of what a whistleblower can do? And a fairly historically accurate portrait, we don't know how this is going to end, as to how they are treated.
Yes, absolutely. Well, in some ways, it's like every other whistleblower before them in that there's the threat of retaliation. But in other ways, because it's an Intelligence Committee whistleblower, it's something very distinctive. In researching whistleblowers, I interviewed all the NSA whistleblowers, including Edward Snowden, but also the senior leadership of the NSA. And what I can tell you from that experience of really getting to know how the intelligence community thinks of its role in the world, this is extraordinary that this whistleblower complaint ever saw the light of day and the American people know about it, because the intelligence community just isn't inclined to blow the whistle, even though there are procedures in place for it to take place. And that's because their job is to keep America safe and to protect secrets to do so. So this is kind of an atypical act for them to be blowing the whistle, yet they've been doing it ever since Trump's election. So in some sense, that complaint before us now is just the tip of an iceberg.
When you hear that, when we hear that there is a second whistleblower, what does that mean? Is that corroboration? Is that something different? Or are we hearing of something, I mean, we don't really know yet, but what is that in the sense of, is that person still a whistleblower when they seem to be corroborating what the first person said?
That person absolutely is a whistleblower, and we're going to see more of them in the weeks ahead, because once one person speaks truth to power, you often get a cascading effect where others feel like they too can come forward and no longer be afraid. I mean, we see this with the hashtag MeToo movement where there were some initial whistleblowers, and then suddenly the whole thing went viral, and you had all these people coming forward saying, wait a minute, you know, I've experienced something similar too. I've seen something similar. And that's what I think we're going to see with this particular intelligence community whistleblower. You're seeing the national security community speak out. You're going to see more people come forward and corroborate that the president has not been behaving normally. He's been abusing his public office for private gain. And it doesn't just take one person to say that. I think there are many people who are going to come forward and validate the initial complaint.
How did you feel about what the New York Times did in the reporting of the whistleblower initially, of finding out that it was someone from the CIA? They were very careful. They have written extensively about their decision to do it. I understand their point, but I also, obviously, the concern is about the security of the whistleblower. What did you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, we all should respond negatively when we see details about a whistleblower's identity revealed, but I don't think the New York Times did anything wrong there necessarily, because I am almost certain that Donald Trump knows exactly who this whistleblower is. In other words, insiders know. People who
right.
didn't know were the American people. And that was the case with Daniel Ellsberg, too. When the New York Times published the Pentagon Papers, they didn't say anything about who gave him the information, his name, his affiliation, nothing. And all of inside Washington knew it was Ellsberg. I think there's something probably similar going on here.
So and you make a really good point, because you say that the president almost undoubtedly knows who it is. And we see this now with the question, of course, comes up with the second whistleblower. And we're reading press reports that the House Democrats want to go to great pains of making sure that we don't hear the voice or see the face of the person. But it's still a very small community, so it's hard to think that they don't know who it is. But I guess it's most important in this case that the outside world doesn't know who it is, in fear of some sort of retaliation.
No, you're absolutely right, because the president, via tweet, has incited his supporters to retaliate against the whistleblower. He used really incendiary language. And that's the real fear, that there'll be some sort of doxing of this whistleblower, that his supporters will gather together to ruin this person's life and threaten their friends and family. And that's what we need to avoid. I think if the American people insist that this whistleblower's identity be protected, it will be protected. But it really does take civil society rallying in support of the whistleblower to make sure that there's not some sort of tragic outcome here.
But you point out in the book that historically we haven't been very good at that. The outcome for the whistleblower usually isn't that great.
That's right. And you see that throughout history. We're funny. Americans are funny. We celebrate whistleblowing as being American. That's the reason you see both Democrats and Republicans in the Senate unanimously voting that the complaint should be sent to Congress. We believe in whistleblowing in theory. But in practice, people's power positions and other things get in the way. And when the media attention goes elsewhere, the typical pattern again and again and again is whistleblowers sacrifice everything for telling the truth. They lose their jobs. They lose their livelihoods. They have their families retaliated against. And we want to be sure that doesn't happen in this instance, because this whistleblower is patriotic, not partisan.
So talk about, in historically speaking, the type of retaliation that comes. Does it come from the organization and the people who are being outed, or does it come from supporters, or is it all over the place?
Well, it usually comes from the organization, because once you've blown the whistle, especially if you've gone outside the organization, then you're seen as someone who's betrayed the organization, and people retaliate against you. You're socially ostracized at work. Oftentimes you lose your job. Someone like Bunny Greenhouse has to petition the Pentagon to get her job back. And then even if you get your job back, fellow employees might harass you. So it really is a subtle pattern of the majority beating up on the one person who actually speaks truth and thinks for themselves. And we have to encourage people to think for themselves if we want to have a democracy.
You talk about that in the book, that much more could be done. The law could be changed. Public policy could be changed to better protect whistleblowers. In your mind, what more should be done? What are you advocating?
Well, my book really provides a context for understanding what we're seeing right now, because the intelligence community has really been blowing the whistle on Donald Trump for failing to uphold his oath to protect, preserve, and defend the Constitution of the United States since his election. So this is a pattern you can see right through James Comey to the present whistleblower. But what I argue in the book is that once the president has been dishonored for the abuse of his office, there's a number of things we can do to ensure that such abuse of power doesn't happen again in the same way. So we can improve protections for national security whistleblowers. We can have anti-corruption legislation where we really spell out what the emoluments clause in the Constitution means for 21st century America. This, too, is a pattern in U.S. history that should make us feel a little calmer about what's going on now, because the whole inspector general system, the one that brought us this whistleblower complaint that's rocking the news today, is a product of Congress's response to President Nixon's abuse of power. It was put in place after Watergate to try to ensure that that didn't happen again. So that's what we'll need to do after the storm passes, is legislate to prevent the abuses we've seen recently.
You, of course, are talking about Washington, you're talking about Trump, but we see whistleblowers in all facets of our life and business and careers. And are those protections? I mean, it seems that if it was in your workplace or my workplace, it's similar, just on a smaller scale.
Absolutely. And it's funny, in writing Whistleblowers, it took me a really long time, and I cut hundreds of pages from the corporate sector just because I wanted to tell a certain story, and it was getting too messy and too unwieldy. But in the corporate sector, ideally, what you want to see is an organization or company to have robust internal procedures for listening to complaints from their employees, because the ideal is to resolve it inside the company without it having to go public. Whistleblowers go public because their leaders hear their complaint and then don't do anything about it. But we really need to appreciate our whistleblowers, because in some sense they're canaries in the coal mine.
Right.
And if you shoot the canary, the mine may very well turn deadly. So organizations like Enron or WorldCom, it would have been great if they would have had a good whistleblower protection system inside the company.
You write in the book, and I thought this was really great, because I have for a long time had trouble understanding my feelings or how I should feel about Edward Snowden. And and you write about this very directly in the book, because on one hand, okay, great. I mean, the information is out. That should be. That's what we want from a whistleblower, right? And yet there are problems here. So give us a sense of what you believe and how you believe history will come down on Edward Snowden and what he did.
Well, Edward Snowden is a complicated case, because obviously he's in the national security community, and national security employees break the law by revealing information to blow the whistle. So it's always going to be a very shaky proposition. Some people say Snowden should have complained from within. From doing my research, and again, I'm a tenured academic. Nobody can fire me for what I say. So part of what I saw my job in this book is to listen to these two competing narratives that had nothing in common and kind of tease out what was true in them. And so the conclusions I reached after doing that research is that Snowden couldn't have complained from within. We would have never heard the substance of the complaint. And the evidence I would cite for that is that the inspector general of the NSA at the time of the Snowden leaks, a man by the name of George Allard, was fired from his position in 2016 for retaliating against a whistleblower. So Snowden, in a sense, fled the country because he knew it was the only way to get the information out there. And what he revealed was something of a public service, because he showed that National Security Agency had adopted emergency measures after 9/11 that became business as usual over time without the American people having a public discussion about it. And that's the discussion he initiated. And we saw Congress change the Patriot Act in response to the revelations. So in the book, I say he may one day be considered our first traitor patriot.
And that's confusing, right? I mean, that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what do we make of that, right?
Yeah, well, it's
interesting. Like nice guy Benedict Arnold. What does that mean?
Yeah, well, Benedict Arnold didn't really serve the cause of the United States of America. But the difference with Snowden is he was, in a sense, breaking the law to uphold the rule of law, to keep that conversation going. So it is a confusing concept, but I think it's one we've got to wrap our minds around if we want to provide better protection for national security whistleblowers in the future.
You talk about the founders, and you talk about how they viewed whistleblowing as a valuable action against tyranny. How is that holding up in this current environment, and where it seems that in some way, shape, or form, we're seeing tyranny almost every day?
Yes, and that's where it's really important. It's so confusing because there's so much mud being slung back and forth, and the president, in a sense, is just throwing things at the wall to see what will stick, and people just get confused. It's dizzying and anxiety-provoking in a 24/7 news cycle to listen to all of this. But the important thing to do under those circumstances is to focus on the content of the complaint. All the other stuff is spin and noise. And when you focus on the content of that complaint, you realize that people surrounding the president think he is a national security threat and a threat to democracy. And that should alarm all Americans. So in that sense, the whistleblower isn't a partisan by any stretch of the imagination. He or she is a patriot. And we just got to let the facts speak for themselves and make decisions based on the facts, not on alternative realities that are created by politicians trying to cover their steps.
How does the whistleblower in this case, and two whistleblowers, come before Congress and testify and not have that be a complete circus?
I think we don't quite know how that's going to be yet. In all probability, it will be behind closed doors. But then the complaint initiates a process where other people can come forward to testify. And that's what's happening now. It's just that the White House has banned them from testifying. But I don't think that's going to hold. That's obstruction of justice. And so we'll see other people speaking. So it may well be they've just arrested two of Rudy Giuliani's associates. It may well be that the whistleblower won't have to testify publicly. They just initiated a process where other people can come forward and validate the substance of the complaint.
Well, it's a fascinating subject, especially now. I assume you didn't know how pressuring you were going to be here, but maybe you did. I don't know. You probably expected the shoe to drop at any time, I guess. The name of the book is Whistleblowers, Honesty in America from Washington to Trump. It's by Allison Stanger, and it is published by Yale University Press. Allison, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Congratulations on your work, and thank you for sharing with us.
Yes, thanks so much, Joe. Have a great day.
Thank you. Again, the name of the book is Whistleblowers by Allison Stanger. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.